Business Confessions starts now. Guest, Daniel Martinez. Industry, software, real estate. Skills, honestly, too many to list. And we'll get into that later on in the show. Daniel, glad to have you on, man.
I'm glad to hear. I'm glad to be here, man. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, yeah. We've talked a few times before this, and I feel like all our conversations were like, wait, we need to go over this. This is good. I know that a lot of people are going to get a lot of information out of this, and you're a very humble guy. So I'm going to go ahead and say this now. Don't be afraid to let them know what you do. You know, I know that you're very humble and you've done a lot, and a lot of people don't know that. So I don't want you to hold back at all.
I think a lot of it is, it's understanding. I've had mixed, if you do a lot of things and there's people that do a lot of things, they have mixed reviews about certain things. If you're pushing a certain product or service, sometimes you want to highlight that one product or service. And if people come into your realm, they'll find about all the things you do. So outside looking in, I try and push one persona just because I don't want to distract and misguide people.
Okay. So what is your main thing that you like to, I guess you're pushing now?
The main thing I'm pushing now is land, man. Land's probably the biggest ROI. All the other things that I do kind of either came first or they came as like a secondary, like little side project thing that I kind of done in the background. Not necessarily as my main thing, but it's just kind of done things behind the scenes that I don't necessarily take credit for, but I operate and I manage.
So for those that don't know, can you kind of give us a little brief outline of everything?
Everything. I'll probably forget some things, honestly.
I know you will.
It gets pretty crazy. So on the software side, I help manage and run Hivemind CRM. We're about 3 years old in February. On software side, we do websites, CRM stuff, automations. I'm really the integrator for our whole business. So I integrate a lot of that stuff. So CRM, my first business I initially started right after land was data. So I've been doing data longer than software. So it was like real estate, data, software. And then after software, I started podcasting, live events. I coordinate a lot of live event stuff. I have a drop shipping company with our apparel, which is the hat and shirts and stuff like that. I do drop shipping. It's not necessarily like out there that we push, but I do run that. We're starting to do video editing for people, media business. We do education. We do podcasting. I don't know if I said that. And then we're filming like a TV show type thing that we're producing too. I think that's all of it.
A TV thing? What is that?
Self-producing our own TV show. It's called Texas Ranch Flippers.
Oh, wow. Like I said, I knew about some of these. I didn't know about all of them.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we're using it for three different things. So the TV thing, TV aspect, we're hoping to get on TV eventually. It's just sometimes you got to self-produce. So start self-producing your own content. We're using it with sellers, land sellers. So it's just we're creating a bunch of content around that and positioning ourselves as a service provider with people that have large ranches.
Okay. So talk to me about what's on your shirt. Tell me about how you find your software company.
Hivemind's like the brainchild of all this. It's kind of like it was a CRM name, but it's kind of turning into like our education brand and just our branding in general. It's just Hivemind. So we have like all these different Hive terminology names for all of our brands because Hivemind's pretty much our brand. So it came about almost an accident and we've been kind of digging with it. Every real estate business has real estate in it and we wanted to separate ourselves into something different. So that's where the Hivemind came about and we kind of been rolling with it ever since.
Yeah, I think that I wish I had the mindset I had now back when I first started, because that's what I look for now. Like what's missing? And I always thought after the fact that real estate, there was so much that real estate was missing, was other industries, I feel like went a little further than what we talked about this a little bit on another podcast. I had Chandler Sane on before, and we were talking about how he's now in the education space. And the things he's learned from there, it's just so much further than what he was initially taught, you know, of, and what we're taught in real estate to begin with, you know, because I think we met at a mastermind, Steve's. Yeah. Where I feel like I met everybody back then.
That was a long time ago, man. I was telling Anthony about this thing, and I'm like, oh, this is another Steve Trang acquaintance.
It is.
And it feels so long ago.
2018,
2019.
18. Yeah. So I met Anthony when he was first getting in at Steve Trang's. That might have been the same meet. I don't know if that was the same one we met on. I think me and you met before that, though. But I met Anthony when he was first getting in.
Yeah. We went to an event in Phoenix. And we met a couple people there, but yeah. I forgot to mention the fund. We're starting the fund too, so that's another thing I'm doing.
See, I actually had that one down. I remember that one. There's a few that you forgot, but I'll touch base on it a little later, probably.
I forgot, man. See?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So the CRM is not, you market it for real estate, but it's not just for real estate though. Don't you run other businesses through it yourself?
Yeah, I coordinate everything through it. I mean, our coaching company is going through it. We're helping other coaches run their coaching company through it. I have a notary clients. We're trying to pick up a high school client, like a school, work with a school directly because it's just a marketing company. Every framework of every business runs the same. It's leads to contacts to leads to business to referrals and recircle all back over again. So every business has that same framework, so we can help any business that needs help.
What does it have that other CRMs are missing?
We're built off of, and this is a little taboo, but I think it's funny, but we're built off of Platinum Card Go High Level, and we're our own little agency, Go High Level. When I first started HiveMind, I was like, oh, Go High Level, but it's blown up so much that everybody knows Go High Level, and then everybody that has their own Go High Level agency, I'm like, oh, what's the difference between you and everybody else? I'm like, well, I was probably one of the first agencies that popped up. And I've been doing it longer and I charge more than them. So you can take that what you will. I don't want cheap business. So I work with high level clients that need the loudest high level things done. And that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen a lot of those go high level agencies and everything. And
they're all competing for a race to the bottom. And I'm just like, I don't want to compete there.
Yeah. You were in, I feel like, way before that was a thing. Like Go High Level pushes agencies now, you know, because for their product and everything. I didn't hear about that until I think REI Reply. Is that one? REI Reply is a one that came out still years or after years, I believe. And it still didn't have everything you needed.
Yeah. But I don't know. I just try and separate myself. There's a lot of competition out there, but there's still a lot of opportunity in other business niches that never even heard of it. So we're just trying to separate ourselves, work with companies that are already generating revenue that just need a little tweak in their business to make a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Run it like a business as well, though. A lot of people, I feel like, miss the mark on that.
Yeah, it's a whole other business. It really is. Like all these new agencies that pop up tomorrow and they're all competing with each other. Like, good luck. I mean, it's just another business, man. Treat it like another business. If you're doing something else, I mean, that was one thing I did for a whole time. Anthony ran the real estate side and I ran the software side for a very long time. So I treated it as like my, HiveMind's my baby. That's my baby.
How do you go from real estate to software? What kind of sparked that idea?
It was actually land to real estate. We started doing land first. I was looking into Podio, and I just started. I did like 1 to 5 deals. It was like very, very soon. And I was trying to get systematized, and there was like, everybody was using Podio, and I'm like, okay. And I'm a tech guy, not like super tech guy, but I'm like, I'm a little bit there. I get by. I started messing with Podio. I'm like, man, this is retarded. And I saw Go High Level and I'm like, okay. And then I realized that agency. So I'm like, okay, if anything, let's start GHL agency, bit called HiveMind, whatever. And let's make sure our marketing business is free. So that's one thing we've always done is our real estate business is free because our marketing is paid for by other customers. So as you build, things become free internally. And that's what all the things, like, I don't necessarily want a billion clients. I just want to make sure my stuff's free so it doesn't cost me anything to run it. And I can systematize it and operate it where I can still run it and our real estate marketing company is zero. Runs at zero, essentially. That's the idea.
Yeah. The barrier to entry, though, I feel like with tech or software is a lot higher than other industries. What was your background in tech or software?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
This will be good.
Absolutely nothing. I mean, if everybody doesn't know, I used to be a truck driver. So one of my first jobs I got growing up, when I got out of high school, was I used to be a forklift operator. Got into a trucking company. The trucking company is like, hey, you want to make more money and become a driver? I'm like, all right. So I went through their internal driving program, became a truck driver. I did that for 2 years. And then I was like, I want to become an entrepreneur. And I'm like, I didn't really have a time. Like, there's no right time to be an entrepreneur. You just kind of jump when you feel you feel like the time is right. And my wife was pregnant. She's like, I'm pregnant. We're going to have a baby at the end of the year. And I'm like, all right, it's now, I guess. I guess we'll figure this out. So I literally worked like 6 days a week for 9-10 months. Once I found out she was pregnant, I had vacation built up. I had paternity leave built up. So I took my 2-week vacation, took my 3-month paternity leave, and I quit. Never showed up to the job after that, after my daughter was born. And she turned 6 like in a month. So I've been self-employed ever since. And it's just been a crazy journey. The first company I started was actually a trucking company, just because I didn't really have any experience besides trucking. So I just started a trucking company, figured it out, failed. And then I was pivoting when it was coming to an end. I was pivoting into real estate. I was looking into real estate. So I had a lot of time out driving. So I listened to a lot of podcasts. One of the big reasons why I like podcasting as a whole is because I'm a product of that. I used to listen to a lot of podcasts on YouTube back in the day when I was truck driving. Because all you had to either listen to music or you listen to podcasts or YouTube. Like, you have to do one or the other. So I used to listen to a lot of podcasts, kind of learned about wholesaling, went down the wholesaling rabbit hole. And then this kid on YouTube called Jalen White popped up. And he had a course for like $350, $250, something like that. I bought it, and the rest is history. But an interesting journey.
Yeah, I love to hear those little stories too, because I was at the beginning, I felt like everybody was trying to sell me something, you know? So I was big into like not the guru space. I'm going to do it my own. Because I'd been in it for, I don't know how long, real estate. It's probably 6 years or so, 7 years at least now. And at the beginning, for the first probably three years or so, I would not spend money on that at all. And now, knowing what I know, like when I get into other industries now, and I throw money at it, like I'm going to learn from somebody who knows, has done it before. Yeah, that one might not work out, you know, and a lot of people are trying to sell me on something else, but I'm going to learn from that regardless, because they've done it before. And absolutely, if they haven't, I'm going to know they haven't. I'll find somebody else. But that, and also too, I feel like if I were given the game, I guess I would say, you know, that information for free, I wouldn't apply it the way I would if I had skin in the game and pay for something.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why, like, I charge high prices now, because I want you to get the best results from it. I had cheap paying clients before, and then they would never use it, and then they'd blame me for wasting their money. And I'm like, I can only help people that want to be helped.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that with Chandler in that podcast as well, that you got to have different levels for different people, of course, but they have to have skin in the game. You know, you want to give everything away for free, you know, and just work with, you know, your high ticket clients, but you got to have something for everybody else too, you know, and then you gain trust through that as well. You know, you're gaining trust through that, and you give them everything at the beginning anyways, and that allows the trust, and that gains the trust as well, you know, and then they want to invest further with you. So yeah, that's something I wish I knew getting into it.
Yeah, there's so much free game out there. I think literally you can learn everything on YouTube that you want to. It's just, you got to know the right keywords to search, and you might not even know what to even search for, but everything's out there on YouTube. Like, I found some crazy game on YouTube that 50 views, 20 views, and like, people are just, they don't even know what they're looking for. They think Mr. Beast is making the most money on YouTube. That's wrong. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of the times too, the flashy stuff is what people want to see, of course, but that's not like the game is what you're calling, you know, that's not the stuff that's going to make you money.
Yeah. And this is where, like, kids nowadays, they all want to become YouTubers. And I'm like, man, it's a hard road to become a YouTuber. Like, I'm on YouTube, and, like, technically I'm a YouTuber, but I'd rather build a small niche audience that is dangerous, and that's my thing. I don't really want 10 million subscribers, you know. I might get there, but who knows? It's not necessarily the goal.
Yeah. And I think, too, whenever you have a product or a service for a specific person, I don't think you're going to get that couple million followers with that, because that industry is not that large, you know. And yeah, in order to do that, you would have to change your model to attract
everybody.
Everybody, correct. And that's how Mr. Beast and your larger content creators have been able to do
things. It's entertainment. Entertainment's for everybody. If you're in the business space, and even with podcasting, there's only a certain amount of people that care about business. Like, you can talk to, like, if I were to have a conversation with my friends from high school, like, it wouldn't even last long. And I wouldn't even go to that conversation because they're not doing the things I want to talk. They're not saying the things I want to talk about. They're not doing the things I want to do. So it would just be a flat conversation. So there's no point in even going to that place to have a no-meaning conversation.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people don't understand that, too. So for those listening, if you have something you can sell already, you might have a following, you might not. It would help if you did, but if you don't, create one maybe. But grow by giving away the information. Give away value. Bring value. You're paid in proportion to the value that you bring to the marketplace. That's why I don't bring him up too much, but Alex Hormozi, that is why he has blown up the way he has, because of the value that he brings to the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's just, it's just overlooked nowadays with everything going on and all the hype, and like we were saying before.
So one of the things I'm working on a book too. So I talked to Anthony about it too. We're already almost done with the book. He's like, we need to release it now because I don't think we've blown up yet. Like, when I laugh about this too. I've only had like 1,800 clients in HiveMind, and I'm like, man, I barely scratched the surface of producing or even making even a dent, you know. But it's really funny too, because like, there's so much customers out there and so many people that I haven't touched yet, that Anthony's like, we need to release the book now. Not you release it. And his idea is like, if we release it now, it's essentially the playbook of how we're creating the content to blow up. Mm-hmm. But we're going to release it before we even blow up, because we have the foresight and vision and we know it's going to work. It's just time and consistency. So I was at an event probably about a year and a half ago. And I mean, started HiveMind almost three years ago. So a year and a half ago, I was about a year in, and the guy on stage, he's like, who thinks your content's the best out there? And it was something about content. And he's like boasting and he has all these followers and stuff like that. And then like, he's like making everybody sit down. And he's asking, like, he's trying to like shame people to like sit down, like, and show he's better than everybody else. And then he got to me, and there was like five people that were standing up. He's like, what makes your content just as good as somebody else's out there? I was like, what's the difference? I'm like, time. And I was like, the only thing you have on me is time. That's it. And I don't know if I offended anybody, but I thought it was funny though, because I was still a little cocky back then.
You didn't like that.
Well, it was one of those things where like, I know I'm doing all the right steps to get there, and a lot of people, they just have more time than me. And to get to where you want to go, like, even with me, like, I literally started, if you go on my Instagram, I started about 3 years ago, and I made a personal decision in my mind that I want to be an influence and create a better future. And I don't necessarily know how to do that, but I'm just going to start creating something. So at first it was creating little graphics that I'd post, and you can go back to my Instagram. I had one post, and then I started creating content. Like, I never posted on there. I was a consumer. Then a light switched, and now I produce. And then now you hire people and people produce for you. You record content like this, and then the editors cut it up, and now it's produced for you. But it was the decision of my mind that I wanted to there's a guy on Twitter. He's always like switching to the other side of the register. Everybody goes to a store and they're always paying. But it's just a mindset choice to switch to the other side of the register where people are paying you. And it's just a matter of creating content.
That's good. How have you applied that same concept to other things in your life?
Man, I just, I'm creating, man. One of the things I love is I love podcasting. It gives me the ability to create a lot of content with, and the amplification of time, man. Me and you can have this conversation once, and whether we're an hour, hour and a half, or whoever, and however long we're here, everybody that listens to it is there forever. I can, there's, whether it's one person or 10,000 people, they can listen to this 1 hour of time over and over again. And you don't get that amplification and replication anywhere else. So that's why I record a lot of stuff on video, because I'm like, I told Anthony, I'm like, you need to get a videographer going with you, no matter what, if they even record anything, just to have the opportunity to catch something that is never going to happen again, or it might not happen for a while, and you kind of have to like set it up type thing. Like if you catch stuff organically, it's priceless, because you're never going to catch that moment again.
I've been seeing a lot of people, I guess, that have the following, or, you know, the loyal following, they've been doing a lot of that organic kind of day in the life kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were strict, you know, by the book content, whatever's popular, you know, what's trending at that time. You can tell the same videos come out about that same stuff, you know, just to get the views and everything. But they've been, I can see them growing exponentially doing that stuff and engaging more with their audience, because that's the stuff that they want to see, that organic stuff, the stuff that out there in real life, you know, a day in the life kind of thing. They don't want to see the same stuff over and over again. They want to relate sometimes and know about that, you know, like a real life kind of stuff. And that goes far. And I think that YouTube, even speaking about that, is rewarding that more so now with new algorithms and everything.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of opportunity for it. I tell anybody that wants to make a difference or just make a change and just start creating. It doesn't really matter how what it is, or how it is, or if it's terrible the first 10 times you do it, who cares? No one's going to go back and listen to it. And if they do, they're a really loyal fan. So usually the beginner stuff, you just got to get it out there. And you let that muscle, that workout, like repetition, build that muscle. And you just got to get it out there. Like I love hopping on people's first podcasts. Like it's one of those things I love hopping early on, because I'm like, I'd rather them practice with me. Like I feel like I'm a good host, and I'm not going to be terribly scrutinized, and I'll just help them out to become better. But it's not, for me, it's not really about the views. It's just, I'd rather give the value to that one person. And usually the what I love about podcasting as far as the host side is I get all the knowledge firsthand. Like I have a guy I'm booking with now. He charges $1,000 an hour, and he's going to give me a free podcast. So you can get a lot of value in exchange for that time that people normally charge for.
Yeah, I haven't told my story, but that has a lot to do with why I actually got into this. You know, I knew it was a stepping stone into what I'm creating, you know, and it's going to help down the road. But also, I've got to pay to talk to the same people I'm going to be interviewing, you know, that are going to be promoted on my platform. That's, yes, you can put a price tag on that, but that's probably a price tag I don't want to pay, you know, to have the knowledge and also to create, you know, a friendship with somebody, you know, as intimate, I say that, as podcasting can be. Have you noticed that? I mean, you've done what, over 400 episodes? Mm-hmm. What have you learned in that amount of time?
So much. I mean, I can't even put into, like, I've learned a lot from different guests, and I try and take like one thing away personally, no matter like if they're new. I've interviewed a lot of like new people where they're like, oh, I've never done a podcast before, and I got something to say. I'm like, all right, hop on, you know, let's see what you got. I'll squeeze them for something. So everybody has something knowledgeable to share with you, no matter what stage of life they are. So I'm always trying to squeeze that one little nugget or 10 nuggets, whatever it looks like, but I'm trying to squeeze something out of them that I don't know. You know, I'm one of the, my personality type is I know a lot. I know a little bit about a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I can talk to a random stranger about a lot of the randomest things. I remember I had a random story. Some guy's like, oh, he's talking about drag racing. And he asked me something about drag racing, and I knew about it. I've never watched a drag race in my life, but it's just something I, like the randomest things. Like, you know something about that somebody's pet. It's like they're, I had another guest. He's actually into racing. He owns a garage at a racetrack that he essentially leases, that he'll go out there and go on the track, whatever he wants. And I'm like, I didn't even know that was a thing, but that's amazing.
Somebody does something somewhere, you know.
Somebody does something somewhere that's amazing, and you can learn about that special thing or a certain strategy that you can use in different facets. Like, I think what's cool about business as a whole is that you can take something that might be super saturated in real estate and take it to a whole nother business niche or category, and you'll be a rock star over there, but just by using your same strategies you took and learned in real estate. Or you can, same thing over there, take it from over there and put it in the real estate, and you're, oh, where did you get that from? They're like, oh, it's just an industry secret in plumbing. They're like, what?
It doesn't make sense. No, that is funny kind of how I landed on this. And I've got kind of like a 10-year plan on what I'm going to be working on for the next 5 to 10 years or so. And I initially started because I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I had kind of done what I needed to do in real estate. I've got a lot of investments now that kind of afford my lifestyle, and I don't have to work anymore, you know? So I was like, and I was getting burnout on running the businesses. We had multiple businesses going, and I was still in the CEO role and doing some of the day-to-day that I shouldn't have been, and kind of burnt myself out. So last year I had sit down and I said, I'm going to create something else that I want to do, you know, like, what do I want to do if it didn't even pay me, you know? And one of those things is, of course, I just like talking about business and I like talking to people, you know, that's just what I like to do. You know, every time we have a phone call, it's a long phone call and we always have something good to say. And that's just how it's been for me. And that's kind of how I landed on podcasting, of course. And that is just doing something I enjoy, you know, and then building something on top of that. But anyways, I digress. What I was saying is I was stacking businesses on top of each other and to come up with something original, you know what I mean? Initially. And you had said that, you know, take something from another industry and do that. I was doing that with businesses to come up with something. That's kind of how I landed on a few things. I probably won't even say anything for a while because I have some cool things I've been working on, but that alone is huge. And that is a game changer too. Take something or get around people in other industries, see what's working for them and apply it to whatever you're doing. That is the whole premise of this podcast is getting different people in different industries, what's working, their secret sauce, you know, and applying that to your own business or own venture that you're currently doing. That is it. Like that is monumental. But I'm glad you actually, you know, I didn't even tell you to say that. Like, that's something I'm so glad you brought that up. And that's kind of where we went with that. But I'm sorry for kind of going out on a tangent there, but I was just like, wait.
It's 100% fact. And I think there's so much leverage you get with that because you can, for instance, this is something I learned from a podcast guest. He bought a three letter domain. You know how he bought it? Real estate type of transaction. He bought it on a lease purchase. He gives a monthly cash flow, agreed on a price in the future, and he just pays a monthly cash flow. But now he gets an asset on his assets and liabilities. I mean, a three-letter domain is a big asset that can be worth millions in the future, no matter if your business fails or not. So he already technically owns the asset, but he just pays a lease on it.
So he found, I guess, the owner of that doing another transaction?
Well, no, he found the owner of it and offered them like a lease-based strategy.
Gotcha. Okay, I was thinking that like
he took a real estate strategy to buy a domain.
That's good. That's really good. I didn't even think about something like that. That's good.
That's what I'm saying. So like, and that's what I learned that from a podcast though. So now I'm like thinking about, okay, if you can buy a domain like that, you can definitely buy real estate with it. What else can you buy like that? Like, I don't know.
Pace Morby. I think he bought or he sold a truck one time or he bought a truck. I think he's told this story before. He's in real estate, of course, for those that don't know. And he posted his truck out there for $5,000 or something. And Craigslist wasn't getting any bites. He was getting offers at like $2,000. He was like, I'm not selling this thing for $2,000. We'll take payments, I believe, but put like 12,000, twice as much, you know, on there. And he said his inbox flooded because throwing it on payments. So his sub two that he's known for, he essentially sub two his truck and got twice as much of the value out of it by offering a different offering.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, if your product or service isn't selling, sometimes it's just changing the terms and the wording and maybe the different type of offer. Maybe you make, instead of giving it all away, you throw in add-ons and then they build it in. Like you gotta mix and match some stuff sometimes. And it's not always going to work out the way you think it is. And you always have to tweak and adjust.
Back to my podcast question on the things that you've learned so far as a podcast host and getting your brand, growing your brand, getting it out there for content as well.
Mm-hmm.
From when you started till now, of course, what do you think is the biggest impact you do now?
Podcasting.
For podcasting, to grow that.
To grow it? I mean, it's just being consistent with it, I think, is the biggest thing. Most podcasts don't make it past 100 episodes, and most fail after 5. So if you're doing better than that, you got something going for you. And my whole thing was, like, I've talked to the 1% podcasters, and I'm not going to call them out, but sometimes they'll replay old episodes because, I mean, 200 episodes is a lot, and you can recycle old content. I mean, you determine the rules. I mean, you can do whatever you want. It's your business. I've never done it. I mean, I could do it. I might do it in the future, but I don't know. I haven't done it. My whole thing is, like, I still got more conversations to have, so... And I still like doing it, so I'm just going to keep running with it. Maybe if you're watching this later and I hit like a 500 or 1,000 episodes or something, and I'm like, oh, I think I'm done. I'm tapped out. Maybe I'll start recycling old content and I'll just let it ride forever. But just you can technically rename the episode and release it again. Like, who says you can't do that? I don't know.
What's your schedule for releasing episodes?
Right now it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I found a good rhythm with it, and a lot of that is I try and turn every episode into two. So really, I only need to do two interviews a week, give or take 4 a month, which is really easy. So
turning one episode into two,
I segment it. So I do like an interview type discovery type podcast with them, and then I'll stop it between 30 to 45 minutes, and then I'll do another 5 to 15 minute episode on the back end covering cool stories. And that's how I get 2 episodes per guest.
That's pretty good. Go ahead.
I get 2 episodes out of every guest within an hour.
Yeah, that's good.
And it's a couple different reasons too, is that everybody likes return guests. 2, there's some people like, oh, I got 2 million downloads and I got like 3-minute episodes. I'm like, well, you got 3-minute episodes. Like, it's a difference. And you got people that have like hour and a half episodes, 2-hour episodes. And they're like, oh, I'm like, yeah. So I try and mix up my times. So like, I have a couple episodes over an hour, but usually they're 30 minutes. Like, my main interviews are 30 to 45 minutes. And those deal breakdowns are usually 5 to 15. So I have like a lot of varying stuff, 45 minutes and under. Like 15 minutes, like probably 7 minutes to 45 minutes. That's where I usually average every episode. But I do have some long form stuff that I kind of dug in or did different stuff, but it kind of varies. It's not necessarily too long. That's just where I found my little rhythm. And then I like the hour episodes because it's a lot easier to time block on an hour and finish on the hour. Anthony Gaona. It's a lot easier to start in the hour, finish in the hour, because everybody has their schedules. So I don't necessarily have to fight and take, if I did an hour and a half, that would take 2 hours of somebody's time blocking versus 1 hour. So it's a lot easier to get people to give up 1 hour than 2.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to the software company. How are you acquiring customers at the beginning?
Word of mouth. Affiliate marketing at first. We just posted a lot. Right now, I have a lot of podcasts in general. So in the beginning, it was just, I mean, I had no following back then. Literally starting from scratch. So getting your first customer is always the hardest. I mean, your first 100 customers is always the hardest. I literally started from scratch. Like, a lot of people, they'll come into the real estate space and somebody will boost them up or give them a platform to grow their building from scratch. I didn't get that. I literally started from scratch. And I like it that way because not that I can show people that I got here. Not that I got here alone, but I feel like I built it alone, you know? which is a pride that comes with that. No one helped me get here significantly. I've been in the trenches since day one, and I'm still in the trenches, it feels like sometimes.
I feel like going through that grind, though, allows you
to learn. Good.
Yeah, it learn all the little facets that are going to help, though, later down the road, and you know what to look for whenever you get a dive. Whenever you get a dive in, you know, views to your website or something along those lines, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, everything, like, I've seen people blow up because of other people's influence, and I'm just like, I'm good. I like, there's a whole thing where, like, everybody's trying to get to the table. Everybody's trying to get to the table, and they want to get invited up and network with the people that will invite them up, and they think that's the way in, but you can create your own table, and people show up eventually.
Oh, that's good.
People show up eventually. It's definitely a slow and painful route, but you definitely get a lot of pride in the end, because we did our first event in 2021 and we had 100 people show up. I'm like, okay, this is pretty awesome. 100 people show up in Dallas, and then we've been doing an event every year. So we keep doing events, whether 10 people show up or 200, who knows? We'll just keep running events. And my whole thing is that I like, most people do events and they're always like, there's gonna be a big pitch at the end, and everybody's pitching products and services. I went to an event, it was $1,000, and everybody pitched $10,000 to $30,000 products from stage. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go home. I'm never doing this again.
Yeah, you don't want your $500 product.
Yeah. I'm good on that. But like my events, I keep them short and sweet. We run 10 to 4 with an hour lunch break, and everybody drops some bombs, and then we have dinner and talk. Pretty straightforward.
To bank off what you were saying, in time it'll come.
In time it'll come.
I feel like you need to lay those bricks, that foundation first, though. And that's that grind. That's what you're going through. Because I've built companies where I've gone the short route, the quick route to get that quick buck, or to not invest in the foundation of that company and just try to grow as quick as I could, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
And not invest in that lower level stuff. And ultimately it always comes back, because you always got to address it essentially, you know?
When you grow too fast, you have growing pains.
Yeah.
You have growing pains. And not that growing pains are bad. I like going the slow route. It's been the knowing that everything it's a consistency. Hormozy says it all the time. Consistency, and he made a whole video about this, delayed gratification. If you can delay gratification and delayed getting paid for years, you'll make it a lot further than people who get paid day one and it blow up day one. I think there's a comedian, Matt Rife, 11 years a comedian, blew up on TikTok during COVID. 11 years doing it prior, barely making money. And then I think he made $20 million during COVID last year.
And they call them overnight success.
Delayed gratification. So I think there's a lot of situations like that where you gotta work through the hard times. You gotta deal with a lot of different stuff, and it's just you benefit in the long run by building it from scratch and going through the pains of building it
and doing it right.
And doing it right and failing forward. I'd rather fail small than fail big, because failing big, it hurts a lot more.
Absolutely.
It hurts a lot more. Yeah. I'll test to that one.
I'll apply that to podcasting, even a little scenario. I'm lucky enough to have some, I guess, good people in my sphere, you know, and the ideal guest I want on the podcast, you know, is super, super wealthy, you know, and just those famous guests that you want on your podcast, you know, for the reach. And I was talking to somebody who's worth 9 figures, you know, and he's well known in podcasting as well. And thinking that we have a relationship together, you know, he's going to be a guest, you know, because I've learned things from him as well. And he was like, you aren't ready for that caliber of guest yet. Yeah. You've got to learn that first. He was like, you go through it, you get your bumps and bruises. And then once you prove yourself, that's when I'll come be a guest. So, and yeah. I'm not ready for guests like that. You know, I'm stumbling over my words. I can't articulate perfectly. Like, I'm going to jumble back and forth, even with these edits that we're doing, you know? So I've still got to go through it and build my foundation up first before I can attract who I'm looking for at the end, you know?
100%. I think that's very wise advice by your little mentor there. Very wise advice, because, man, if you go back to episode 1 to probably 50, they're terrible. It's all right. I'm okay with it. They're still there, but they're probably terrible. But I think I've gotten significantly better now that I'm ready for those high caliber people. I've had high caliber people on even now, but those high caliber people, they're not guaranteed to blow up your podcast even then. And I think a lot of people they'll bait, I hate those like drama podcasts or the relationship podcasts where they're always like baiting people to be outraged and get a reaction. I'm like, man, this is just for me to learn. I don't really care who listens.
Yeah. I even thought about that too. I was when I was coming up with what I was going to talk about and everything like that, I was like, I could go the cheap route or get the view route and be the controversial type, you know, because that's what gets views. It's what gets eyeballs. It's the same with news, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And people aren't talking about the good stuff or how somebody, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's not true to myself, you know, and that's not how I want to be. So I'm going to take the value route and do what I enjoy doing. And then, like you said, grow who enjoys this as well and loves talking about this kind of realm. And that's how we're going to grow.
Yeah. 100%. It's the way to do it.
Yeah. What's your top way technique? I guess I would say you might not have a technique or so, but what's your top two ways to acquire new clients?
I haven't ran ads. That's the other thing too. I'm planning to run ads next year.
Never.
I feel like I didn't want to waste my money early on because I didn't have a foundation. So I've been waiting to run ads for a while. Maybe I'll start running ads. I'm planning to run ads next year. We've been running ads for our coaching, and that's already been yielding a lot of fruit already. But I think ads is the way to do it. If you have the spend for it, you can literally do amazing things with ad revenue. And you can, I mean, if you're stuck in real estate, run ads. You'll get business. If you're stuck in plumbing, get ads. Hormozy, I always laugh about this because I don't read a lot of books. I read Hormozy's first book. And when I read the book, I was like, I knew exactly what he did. And everybody's like, no, he never said what he did. I'm like, no, he did say what he did. You just have to read between the lines. And what he did was Hormozy was good at ads and creating leads. So he'd help gyms that couldn't produce leads and bad at ads. He would have them prepay for their ads and then he'd bring in leads. And that's his whole strategy. That's literally what he does now. Not that he does it with his personal brand now, but that's what he did with the business side of it. It was always built through ads. So people that already had a foundation in the marketplace, whether they have a physical location, you just boost them up through ads and now you're hitting the right people. And that's it. Very, very easy way to grow your business is ads.
For coaching, where are you sending? Are you sending them to a landing page through the ad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with coaching, you always want to target you always want the right people. So you'll get a lot of people that come in through the ad that necessarily don't fit your product, service, or price point. So it's always targeting the right people. So we've had our ads up, and then we had our ads was a opt-in just because information. And then we had a VSL, and then it was to a call after that. So we've had people that that's so funny. People will come in, watch the opt-in, get to the VSL, and then go straight to the calendar and book. And I'm like, okay, you're not the right person anyway because you didn't watch the VSL. Because the VSL separates everybody else in. If you finish the VSL, I mean, you finish the VSL and you're ready to schedule a call. And then the other thing too is like the VSL separates everybody else. Like it might not be the right fit for you. So the VSL kind of pushes, it separates everybody's down the right path. And then people that trickle out is where you get the right leads that come through the right VSL.
Do you have an offering for those others or for the other clients?
Yeah, we of course push them to CRM. And I mean, that's what the whole opt-in is for, is that we'll offer them our dollar course, we'll offer them the free land investing checklist. Like we have cheap services and free services that still provide value that we can still give to that person. And the other thing, people might not be ready to buy now, but they will in the future. So like a lot of people get introduced to our brand just through the ads themselves. So once they get interested in the ad, then they'll come back around and circle back through the ad again. And then we get a lot of those people as well. Because then now they know who you are, because there's a step of discovery happening when they opted in.
Just thinking on this a little bit through that VSL, have you thought about having a dual VSL to where one is, hey, if you're making X amount in real estate, do this. Or if it's whatever, it's about land. If you've done X amount of deals, do this. If you've done X amount, do this or click here. And then having a split VSL.
I thought about splitting VSL. There's the person that's running our funnel. He's like, you need to convert a handful before you start switching and tweaking it too much, because you don't have enough data points to know what to fix.
Also, another little tip that I gained from Chandler saying, now that he's been in the education space, they did the testing and everything, and they were sending everybody to a landing page through running ads. Initially, as soon as they swapped it to their YouTube page, or say your content or whatever you're creating the most content on, where you have the most value that you're giving out, it went from I think a 30% click rate to like a 70%. So it more than doubled doing that, because everybody's coming from YouTube at that point, because he's giving away the information that everybody's seeking, and then everybody's charging, or he's charging for the implementation. On that aspect. Okay. But thought I'd share that little tip with you.
I'll have to do that. The YouTube thing is, it's crazy. We had a client blow up on TikTok. He had about 30,000 followers on TikTok, and he had one video last time I checked, it was like 6 million views in like 3 weeks. And like 3 million of that was like in 48 hours. It was crazy. So we built his landing page and built an opt-in. From those analytics, we had, last time I checked, it's still been going. So I haven't like, after it goes crazy, like the first day, you're like, okay, I'm not going to check this for a while. You check it like every other day because it's still going crazy. But I think I checked it probably about a Sunday, which has been about 4 or 5 days since then. We had 60,000 visitors with almost 6,000 opt-ins. So we're converting like 1 in 10 to opt-in with their name, email, phone number.
This is your media company. I gained that just a little bit ago, but I was still thinking about your software company of a client in that. And then I was like, why is he saying that? Okay, that makes sense. So your media company has done this.
Yeah. So we're helping like a lot of people. They're front end sales. They know how to be in front of the camera. They might know how to speak. Maybe they have coaching and students and all this stuff, but they don't have the back end figured out. A lot of people. I have probably 4 or 5 high level coaches that are big on podcasting. They're big on social media, or some one social media they're really big on. They're doing something somewhere. And we're helping them with their back end, whether it's their coaching products or their funnels or their a lot of the back end stuff, or just helping them kind of coordinate, because a lot of people, they don't have that figured out. Like once you start blowing up, you're like, I have all this traffic. What do I do next? And they don't know what to do. So we help them kind of coordinate and control all that stuff through the CRM. So that's where the CRM comes in. Was like, we're throwing in the CRM to kind of help coordinate and control all that aspect, because like social media traffic is a whole nother, it's a business. It's a whole other business. So we're helping people with that.
Is there a trick to that?
So, and then the other add-on, we put his YouTube just underneath of his video, underneath of the opt-in. He's went from 80 followers to, last time I checked, almost 11,000 on YouTube.
I just
put a little button for join the YouTube.
And what platform is that on?
This is a TikTok. So the TikTok would lead to a website, and then the website would lead to an opt-in. And then underneath the opt-in was a little YouTube button that shook or whatever. So from that little button, he's gotten almost 11,000 subscribers underneath of the opt-in. People wouldn't even fill in the opt-in. They would just go straight to the YouTube. That's what that tells you. because we have more YouTube subscribers than we have the opt-in.
I've heard that before, is TikTok's really good for gaining, grabbing the attention or grabbing that, and then it's just a funnel to something else.
Mm-hmm. And you got to direct it, because like I've never seen that many website views. Like for me, like that many website views, the most I ever heard was I had a big guy on Twitter, and he does a whole newsletter. He releases like a whole newsletter once a week, and he gets like 50,000 website visitors a month. I'm like, holy crap, this is crazy. This guy blew up on TikTok. He had 60,000 website visitors in a week and a half. I'm like, this is nuts. It's crazy.
Holy cow.
Social media is very underrated. So now it comes to the point where, like, now that I've seen him blow up, I know the foundation I have. All I need is one video to go viral, and it's over. Literally over for everything that I do. Like, my GHL agency, I can raise the price, and I'll still get customers. Because it's not about your price point and what you do. It's about who you are and what content you produce on the other side. So I've had clients come into the podcast. They're ready to buy just based off the podcast alone, because I can have a one-hour conversation with that person. But if I have a podcast with, let me tell you exactly what it is, because I keep track of this stuff. Right now, I have 16,000 minutes on the podcast right now, which is 278 hours, which is almost it's over 11 and a half days of content. So people can go, not even if they're consuming all 17 hours, 17,000 minutes of it, but they can go through some of it, and then they're like, okay, this guy's, he's good. That's somebody I want to work with. I feel like I know him just because I've heard him talk for hours. And what's the one thing that builds relationship is communication. So if you can communicate indirectly with thousands of people on repeat with thousands of hours,
you've laid the foundation. And it sounds like that's what you're doing for your media clients as well.
I'm helping them lay the foundation. Like a lot of them, like they're not structured on the front end, and then I'll come show them what I have. And they're like, dude, you built all this? I'm like, yeah, I built it all over the last 3 years. It doesn't happen overnight, but I can help shortcut and build what I have to this point because I already know what works and what doesn't.
So many people get that backwards, I feel like, nowadays. They'll just try to go viral, and then they'll go through, and then they'll build their product, and then they'll try to do all this other stuff, and then it just busts. Because
you have to be ready when you go viral. Because if you go viral and you miss it, oh, you miss it bad, and you're like crying in the corner because you missed it bad.
Yeah.
And like one thing is, we were able to help him. Like he was literally going viral. We were making tweaks to his website as it was coming in. Hey, this is happening. Let's fix it right now. Hey, this is happening. We need to fix this right now. Hey, this is happening. We need to fix this right now. So we made like iterations like every hour on the hour just based off of the traffic that was coming in and the feedback we're getting live from all the traffic coming in.
That's immediate right there. You know, that tells you, that gives you the answer right then and there.
Yeah, exactly. So like it was literally crazy. So like we went through like so many iterations when he was going viral, and we already had it set up before he even went viral. So as soon as we went viral, we're okay, we need to get our hat on and let's get this thing going. Hey, let's monitor everything while it's coming in because it's going to slow down eventually, but we need to get this right now.
Do you know what you attest that going viral to? Or do you think
I think it was the character. I mean, what he did is he's doing a 5-acre giveaway. So we're providing the 5 acres. So you just give stuff away. It goes back to the Mr. Beast effect. Mr. Beast kind of blew up just by giving. I think I saw a video of Mr. Beast, like the first video sponsorship he did. He's like, oh, we're going to give you $10,000. He's like, I'm going to give it to somebody and I'm going to record it. He's like, what, is that going to work? I'm like, yeah. And he gives it to like a homeless person on his first sponsorship on his video. He gave it to a homeless person, 10 grand.
So you think having an actual giveaway is what drove that?
It's a giveaway big enough that it makes sense. I talked to another guy and he's like, I've been giving away land for a while. And I'm like, well, how much is it worth? And he's like, well, it's like 2 to 5 grand. I'm like, this one's probably worth like 50 to 100. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that was the driver. It could have been the character of the person doing the video too. Like the person doing the video, he's very outgoing. So it might have been him doing it too. Like, I don't know. I can't say what the factor was. There's no like exact science to social media. It's a combination of a bunch of things.
I actually was going to ask about that. That was something that I saw on your Twitter, the Lane giveaway. I think it was like 60,000 people in like 2 weeks or something. Website yeah. visits. And then you had an opt-in as well, and you gained like what, 5,000 something?
Yeah. It's right now it's almost 7,000. I checked it a little while ago. It was like 6,700 people opted in. Then you use that data for your ads. You make an audience out of them, and now they get hit on Facebook and Instagram and Google, and now they're in the circle.
So everything you learned from that, how would you, if somebody else came to you with a business and wanted to replicate that and not go viral, of course, but what kind of foundation would you lay, or what things or tips would you give?
It's always when you go to social media, you always want to have the same thing client facing every time. So that way if people get curious, they'll click around in your social media, they'll go to Instagram, they'll go to YouTube. I learned a new thing just by doing this. And I'm not gonna say it on the podcast, but I'll tell you afterwards. But it's so new that I don't want to spoil it. It's too soon. It's too soon to let it go. Okay. But this is something that I do, and I do it based off of, because I want to see, whenever I go to people's TikTok or Instagram, I want to see like if they got everything coordinated and up and running and optimized. And it's just something I do because it's my media side of the brain going in like, oh. So I'll go to their same on TikTok, and I'll go to their TikTok page. What link is there? Do they have their Instagram and YouTube connected? If I go to their Instagram or YouTube, what links are there? Does it go to the same place? What is the key driver he might be pointing to right now? So like Black Friday is coming up, and I don't know when this episode will come out, but people might, during Black Friday, they might switch all their links to drive to something for Black Friday, for some type of one-off product to drive that traffic. So what are you going to do with the eyes and traffic when you blow up? Do you have a product or service ready at any moment in time to plug it in that you're ready to go once it goes? If you don't, are you ready to fix it and fix problems that come up when you don't? And do you have a person on your team that can fix it? So I'm working with another client right now. He was on WordPress. Nobody on his team knows WordPress. So I'm like, okay, you have problems on your website, and they've been there for a long time. So now you have people going to 404 links just because you don't know how to fix it, and you don't have somebody that knows how to fix it. So now you're losing people. I don't know how much you're losing, but you're losing. And there's like no, like you can't put a number of the traffic that just skips away because they hit a 404 error. Oh, I have a funny joke. This is for me. So I was going through, I had a demo on my platform. I still do now, but I'm the only one that messes with my website just because if somebody's going to mess it up, it's going to be me. But I ate my words on this point. So I was going through it recently, and I was going through the demo, and I hit the forum, and you always test your stuff. So I was testing my stuff, and I do it periodically just to make sure everything's working. And I filled out a form, and it went nowhere. And I'm like, I threw my hat away. I'm like, I haven't touched this website in like 9 months. Everybody that's filled out this form has gone to a 404, and I missed all this traffic, and no demos have been done. And it's only my fault. It's funny.
How often?
It's funny now.
Yeah. How often are you looking at that data, though?
Probably not as much as I should, but one of the things is like, if, and this is where like hindsight, I should have double checked it, but if I know I do it, it's usually done right in the most case. If I do it, I usually do it right because I know what I'm looking for, and I'm looking for different errors or things I could tweak to make it better. But man, when you're the person to blame, like there's no one else to blame but you. And I tell my team too, I'm like, look for stuff like this because, and like for instance, I was out with my team yesterday, and I'm like, they're telling me this website that they did, and I'm like, okay, that's wrong. And go through it again and make sure everything's right again, because I don't want this to happen like I did it. So it's like a learning lesson for them, because like you gotta double check, triple check, and make sure everything goes where you want it to go, because if you have a hole in your funnel, it can be disastrous.
And there's so much too, I feel like, that could be a bottleneck for that. There's a lot of steps. There's a lot of things. And I feel like people that haven't or aren't doing that daily, you know, and learning from that, will make those mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so tedious, so small.
It's so small. I was laughing. This is another side one, too. So I was talking to another client, and he has, like, a Facebook group of, like, 30,000 people. And I was like, are you collecting the names of the people that come in? He's like, yeah, I have Facebook, and I ask them the questions for their name, their phone number and email. And I was like, you know, Facebook doesn't collect that. He's like, what? He's like, it doesn't collect it? I'm like, no. Like, you have to manually collect it or have a plugin collect it for you. And he's like, oh man, I missed out on all these people that came in. And then I'm like, I test another guy, and he's like, oh, we manually take it. I'm like, you want to automate that? I can help you automate that process where you can collect that information. And then I talked to another guy. I told him the same thing. Cause it's one of my key things. Like, I'm always poking holes in their system. And they're like, oh, I've never even thought to collect it. And I'm like, okay, this is something. If you're new, starting a Facebook group, start collecting people's information, whether you manually collect it or you use a plugin to collect it, start collecting those names, numbers, and emails. Cause I always think of it like a toll bridge. If people come in and give me their number and email, I'm going to let them in. But if they don't, I'm still going to let them in because I want them to come into my group. But the versus side of it is that I've been collecting people's names and emails on automatically without having to pull that or pull that in a different way through product services. I'm just collecting data.
Digital gold.
Digital gold. And your list is your list, man. Your list is very, very important to the day you die. And you can give that to your kids. Your list, because a lot of people don't change their number, a lot of people don't change their email, and if they do, you start collecting multiple emails. So I have people that they'll give me one email, and I'll collect it again when they buy a product or service, and I got another email for them. So I'm just collecting emails.
Giving it to yours. That's so smart. I did not think about that. People pay you a lot of money for that list too.
Yeah,
even just be featured on it, not just even giving it away, but you sending something out for them.
Well, I mean, you can use that for targeting. Once you get ads up, you can use that as your audience. So people that have touched you in some way, they're already getting introduced to your product services just because you already have their name, number, and email. And Zuckerberg will take that and serve them your ads.
That's good. That's something I'm just now even getting into and learning now that I've dabbled in the software space now and other online industries. I wish I would have collected more emails. I wish I would have grabbed more information from all the companies and things that I've done over the years. Like, I mean, granted, I have a few lists right now of, you know, a few, probably 7,500 or so, but it'd be 30,000 if I really did it right, you know, and actually aggregated that information. But
so I have another story with this. So I saw Bed Bath & Beyond just went out of business during COVID. Overstock.com bought their IP, which is their domain, their email list, and other stuff that came with that. And they were emailing Bed Bath & Beyond's customers using Bed Bath & Beyond's domain with Overstock's products.
Is that legal?
It's legal. I mean, you own the IP. Bed Bath & Beyond's out of business, so they sold it for parts, essentially. So if some other business buys their parts, which it could be their email list, their domain, and all that stuff, they can use that for whatever they want.
Actually, that's funny you bring this up. I don't know if I should probably tell this, but nobody's going to be listening to this one anyways. This is the early days, so I'll go ahead and give out some game. If anybody wants to do anything, is go find old business owners, and they collect that information. Go buy that information from them. Buy the... you know, the 200,000 clients that they've had, you know, those old businesses that, you know, I can't believe so many people just let businesses go because they don't understand that, you know, there's EBITDA now and people will pay for that and everything. But that's another story, and I digress. But yeah, go find old businesses, dated businesses that store that information or store some kind of emails. That's huge.
Yeah, it's very underrated, very underrated. It's an asset that a lot of business owners don't even think it's an asset.
I used to not know about it.
It's funny. I learned a lot. I learned a lot down this journey.
I think it helped too, because we were in the same realm at one point, and you being in another realm, of course, in another industry, bringing those tactics over to what you've done. And I think that's attested to your success as well over the years.
It's just, it's been a lot of information. I've learned a lot from mentors. I learned a lot from different business. I just pay attention. I try and pay attention to everything. People say, and this is so funny. I went to think of like every guru has like their intro webinar. And I'm like, every guru that does an intro webinar, they might give you sauce, but there's hidden higher level sauce that is like said really fast. And it might be overlooked by 90% of the people. And if you catch it, it makes it worthwhile. So I did this with a guru out there, and I knew most of the stuff he was talking about. And then he said something really quick and just skipped over the rest. I'm like, no. Like, that was it. Got it. I'm good. Deuces.
Gave the information, but didn't make it. Thought you just skim over it.
Yeah. So everything that is like lightly skipped over is usually the juice. And so a lot of people, they like bragging. So if you get an opportunity just to, even if you're there live in person or on stage, they kind of control the conversation a lot more. But I think podcasting, you get a lot more opportunity to get organic flow. Cause I think with on stage stuff, they're kind of ready knowing they're going to speak and what they're going to speak on. But, if you catch somebody like in a live conversation or a live podcast type thing, you can catch that little nuanced phrase or term or something that could be huge that is like really overlooked most of the time.
Yeah. What have you gained? What over the years, knowing that now to look for that, what are some things that you've gained?
I think it's a skill set, man. Like I'll go to, I'm not a book reader, but like even with the Hormozi book I mentioned earlier, going through the whole book, he never said what he did. But I read it between the lines and I figured out what he did. So I think it's like a little hidden skill set that I have that I can go listen to a podcast and I'll get something that not necessarily is blatantly obvious, but I'll catch something that was just subtly mentioned. And that I think that comes down to like knowing a little bit about a lot of things, because you can piece apart and break apart like different conversations. And I think I use that with podcasting too, because I active listen to dig into certain topics that I want to know about, you know,
sifting through the fluff.
Yeah. You have to sift through everybody on social media. They want to give you their front facing self, but there's hidden layers that peek through behind that front facade that you can pick up on. Pay attention.
Yeah. So you do a lot of things outside of software. Of course, there's real estate, investing, education, land development, affiliate marketing, mastermind, lending, I believe.
Yeah.
Media company. Yeah. Yeah. I saw that one. Email marketing, data sourcing, what am I missing?
I don't know. I forgot about some of those things. It's just funny.
So everything you do, how are you identifying these opportunities?
A lot of people don't know how to drive traffic. So you find the people that are good at what they do and then you drive traffic to them and take a piece. So I don't necessarily run the lending business. I just guide traffic. The data business, I don't run that. I just guide traffic. A lot of it is just directing traffic to somebody else. And you can take credit for it, but it's just done in the background without your effort, and you still get paid on it.
That's affiliate marketing, correct?
In a way, but you can take there's affiliate marketing type link base where you just guide traffic, or you can take on internally, hey, I'm going to bring you on internally and I'm going to take a portion of your business.
I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because I have a question on that end even, because I've been seeing this lately where somebody doing something will then take somebody else's good idea, bring them on as a partner essentially, and send it through or create a course or do something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's so smart.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, they don't have the eyes, or B, they don't know how to get them. So if they have a valuable business and you already have the eyes, why not bring it in house and just put them on the team and just facilitate the traffic whenever it comes in?
A lot of people don't like to give away their business or a chunk of that at all. How are you pitching that?
They're not the right partner. A lot of people, you got to show them the value of like, hey, I'll help your business grow. All you got to do is give me a portion of it, and you pitch it that way. There's a big guy on Twitter. I just had him on my podcast. That's all he does. He has like 7 businesses, and all he does is bring in the traffic, because he has a big social media following on Twitter, and he funnels all the traffic to his subordinates, and then they run the business.
It's like a mini private equity.
And that's what Hormozy does. Hormozy brings his skill set, and then he acquires a portion of equity through his skill set. You bring your skill set to the table. And your skill set might be eyes, it might be systems, it might be sales, it might be whatever. You can acquire portions of business just by bringing that to the table. It might be your team. It might be capital. There's the different versions of that.
Is there anything you're looking at right now to acquire or do the same thing that you've done previously?
A lot of it is like, I really don't, it's not like something I openly push out, but I don't know. Once we get our fund up, we'll probably look to acquire more businesses, but it's more businesses that were help us do what we do in the land space. So it might be like note servicing. It might be construction company, might be building companies. It might be something to that effect where they can help us in the land side. Not necessarily towards like random businesses.
Yeah, it's got to fit in your ecosystem.
It's got to fit in my ecosystem 100%, where I can feed it indirectly through what I do.
And then it just becomes a revenue loop.
Yep. That's it.
So some of us are lucky enough to stumble upon game-changing information, that kind of aha moment when something just like clicks for you.
Mm-hmm.
What's been a recent moment for you?
Podcasting is probably the biggest one that I've had a foresight with that. I'm very introverted. I hated being in front of crowds. I mean, I hated speaking in front of class. When I was in high school, it wasn't really a muscle that I had. I built it out of necessity and foresight. And it's proven to be probably one of the best things I've ever done to this point, because it's yielded in everything that I've done as a whole has circled back to podcasting in some way.
That's good to know, especially in my situation.
Yeah, 100%. Like there's so many opportunities that have been presented to me that I've taken or not taken because of podcasting.
I think it also goes to show too, because I study other people and I'm not creating anything new, you know. I copy a lot of people who are just successful, who I've learned from. And I've noticed a lot of these founders, a lot of these people who've exited companies have podcasts, you know. A lot of these high net worth individuals have podcasts, and talking with other people who have podcasts now, it makes sense.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I did it the same reason. I noticed that people that were successful create content. People that are successful have podcasts. People that are successful have service businesses. People that are successful are in real estate. People that are successful have funds. People that are successful have investments. People that are successful have a book. People that are successful have a podcast. So all those things, that's all I'm doing. Everything I named. the path has already been laid. You just follow that. You follow the footsteps and create it in your own niche, and then you just follow. Like, you just do it.
That is game changing information. Like, I hope anybody listening is writing that down. That is so good. I wish I had these conversations 5 years ago.
It's simple too. It's very, very simple. And it's coming down to paying attention to what people are doing. And you can see that visually on their social media. I mean, most people that are successful, they're very plain spoken. They try not to trick you with their words. Yes, they're sales oriented because most people that are successful are salespeople. Yeah. So what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it?
All right, it's time for our confession segment.
Okay.
For this, we want to know the trade secret, some secret sauce, as you were mentioning before, that higher level stuff that they skim over. We want to know something that you haven't told publicly. So, Daniel, what's your confession?
Sell everything on terms. you kind of alluded to it earlier. But sell everything on terms. You get a lot more value on the end, and everybody, you create value in different ways where it can translate to cash. So if you don't need to get cash, sell everything on terms.
Give us an example.
A lot of land investors, they buy and sell everything for cash. They buy for cash, sell for cash, buy for cash, sell for cash, sell for cash. And you can do that. It's not a wrong way to do it. There's not a lot of wrong ways to do stuff in business. It's just a learning route. So you can sell things for more and quickly on payments. And we kind of alluded to it earlier. We found this out with land. Every property we sell is always seller financed because banks will not lend on land. So if we become the bank and we facilitate the lending part of the transaction, while it was booming, we were selling stuff over comps because we seller financed. We sold it faster because we seller financed. And we just did the right marketing. So everything on terms.
So as we wrap up, what has you excited for the future?
Time, man. Time, it makes me excited for the future. I still lean on that thing I said a while ago where time is your greatest asset. And if you know where you're going, you can dig in deep and consistently produce, and time will do its thing. Time is the biggest multiplier. So I know what I'm doing and how I'm doing it, and I'm waiting for time to catch up.
Anything you're working on right now?
I'm working on starting a fund. I think it's called the Texas Land Bank Fund. I think is what we're calling it. But the fund should be coming out by the end of the year to raise capital for land deals. We'll be a debt fund. We'll be investing in land deals that we're facilitating on our land business.
Why are you creating a fund?
To do more transactions. You have the ability to create the life you want over time and distance, but if you leverage OPM, which is other people's money, you can amplify that and create the life you want quicker. So it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's a get-rich-definitely. You'll get there eventually over time.
I like that.
So we're starting a fund. We have a lot. There's a lot of opportunity as the boomers are transitioning these businesses and all these assets to the next generation. Just like everybody's like, oh, there's a huge transition of businesses. There's a huge transition of land. Most people that own land are elderly and they own it free and clear. So these are transfer it down to their family members, or they sell it. So we're trying to position ourselves to acquire as much land as possible and sell it, finance it back to our people. There's a lot, I guess, in Arkansas. Arkansas is the first state to legally take back land almost through like eminent domain from a Chinese corporation.
Really?
Because there's foreign entities coming in to steal our resources. Even to the point where Saudi Arabia has alfalfa farms, which is very water abundant, taking up and sourcing land and stealing up all the water resources and shipping it back to Saudi Arabia. So my little land business has a bigger opportunity to transition all that land and sell it back to our people.
That's good. I didn't know it went that deep.
Oh yeah, it's deep. It's deep. It's very purposeful because there's so much land out here and there's a lot of people just buying it for the wrong reasons. So if we can buy it and seller finance it. And the thing of the what we do in especially land space is we buy unobtainable land, whether it's too big and too expensive to buy, we break it down into smaller pieces to people that want it can afford it. And then we seller finance it. So
you'll track it up.
Yep.
If people want to get into that, where would they go to? Don't you have an easier way to kind of look into that?
Yeah, you can text land to 210-972-1842, or you can go to milliondollarlandmastermind.com.
I didn't even, shameless plug, but I mean, I wasn't even going for that. Just people that are interested and want to get into that. So before we go, talk to me about your book real quick.
It's probably going to come out next year. It's definitely going to finish.
Okay, so nothing new. Do you have a name for it yet, or do you know what you're going to be doing?
We already finished probably like 75% of it. We just got to get an editor to edit it, but I don't know what the name's going to be yet. Essentially, I don't know what the name is going to be yet.
Okay, that's fine. I'll just have you. That'll just give me another excuse to have you on the podcast again.
Yeah. I'll definitely do that again. We didn't even cover like anything else. It was like mostly software. So I would love to come back on again because the land stuff is where it's fun.
Yeah.
We didn't even jump into that. The time passed for a while.
I know.
We didn't even jump into that.
We can get another one scheduled.
Let's do it. I'm down.
Okay. Let's do it. And then I'll just have that for another. I'll push that out on something else as well, but we'll end it up right here. Is there anything else you want to go over? You got any other value you want to share?
Yeah. If you're interested in putting some money in some land deals, check us out. Just text the number that 210-972-1842. If you have any questions about anything, you can literally text them and my team will assist in any answering of any questions about anything, whether it's about the fund, real estate, software, it all goes to one number. Check it out.
Daniel, I really appreciate you coming on today. I know that anybody listening to this can take even just one little nugget from here that you shared, one, and increase their revenue.
I hope so. That's the point, right?
Yeah. Again, thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem.